B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, right back to your phones. As promised, there's a couple open lines if you want to grab them. 617-779-0985. Erickson and Haverhill on Kyrie Irving. Go ahead, Erickson.
Hi, guys. I don't know if you can hear me or not, but if you were the Celtics, what would you want Danny and them to do in light of all these news about Kyrie Irving?
So what do you do? At this point, there's nothing they can do.
Right, there's nothing you can do at this stage. You got to ride it out.
And just hope that Kyrie keeps his head screwed on straight and doesn't get distracted and doesn't cause a problem and just hope you're... You're at the mercy of that moody, menstrual diva. That's it. I mean, seriously, I mean, there's nothing you can do at this point.
No, there's nothing you can do is correct. Yeah, there's nothing you can do. The trade deadline's gone. You know, you're still going to try to sign him and keep. You can't trade him, right? Even after the season, like, that's, he's a free agent. What are you going to do? You're going to bench him?
And you just wonder, like, are all these guys playing for nothing? Meaning... Normally, a free agent to be has to prove himself, and the more he plays and the better he plays and the farther he goes, the more money he makes, and he'll get to pick his spot with more money and blah. Don't you think all these guys already have it mapped out? They know exactly where they're going and what they're going to make and what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And there's really, like, nothing to play for.
So this is the problem now in that league, if you start looking at it in that context, is that the talent is so great, right? That the talent is so important that you will prostitute yourself for, if you're a team, it doesn't matter. You got to get the great player, and the contract terms are all dictated for you. You'll throw everything you can at him to get the guy.
No, but I'm just saying the motivations for the individual players. I don't know what it is. Durant's won his rings.
And so is Kyrie.
Kyrie's won his ring. They're probably not staying with their teams.
So is Kawhi. He's got a ring, too.
So it's like, what are these guys all playing for? I wonder about that, and I wonder how that's going to look. Mike in Cranston, how do you feel about replay in sports?
I hate it, and specifically I hate it in baseball. Maz, I'm surprised you didn't bring this up. I would say after the play at the plate, the two best plays in baseball are, one, a throw-out tag where when I grew up and watched baseball, you didn't even have to tag the guy. If the ball beat the runner, he was out. You just slap the tag and throw and show the ball. And then do you remember the neighborhood play? Turn and two. Do you know how good that used to look when Nomar would come across the bag on a close double play? And he wasn't even in the vicinity, but no one cared. It just looked pretty. So the aesthetic of the game is being hurt by the whole replay thing, too.
Okay, so they took the neighborhood thing out, right, because they want to protect those second basemen.
Right, and so look, the fact that you used to be able to get away with the neighborhood play, you know, to me that got ridiculous. So I don't mind them tightening that one up a little. Because there were guys that would come two feet off the bag. I mean, that just got sloppy. Like, so now you're cheating on a double play is what that is. So I don't mind them dialing that one in. And, you know, I don't expect the caller to listen to every second of the show. I expect them to listen as much as possible. But that said, we did mention earlier, like, the big one to me is a stolen base or a play at the bag where a guy pops up and his foot comes off the bag. That one drives me bananas. I also don't have a problem with the guy actually having to apply a tag because I think that one got stupid. You know, guys didn't even put down the tag properly anymore.
Okay. I just hate going to the headsets every single time there's a play.
Yeah, I don't like the micromanaging.
So
that's what I don't like.
The baseball thing that frustrates me, again, is each manager gets a challenge, but then there's also the crew chief challenge.
Correct.
Where you don't need to officially challenge. You can just say, hey, Joe, you guys should look at that. And then they go look at it. It's like, so what do you do? So any close play, they're going over there, whether you have challenges or not.
Correct.
You've taken out the strategy. So, I mean, I don't think replay works. If you're asking me across the board, I'd rather do away with it than keep trying to tweak it. Just get rid of it because it hasn't helped. It hasn't gotten the plays right. It hasn't ended controversy, et cetera, et cetera. All the things I've been saying. It doesn't work. It does not work. Doesn't work. But if you're going to keep it, no booth reviews. Make the managers have to use their challenges. And when they're out, they're out. And that's it. And so then you're not challenging the pop-up slide. You're not challenging the toe drag offsides in hockey. You know, you've got to save it for a play that matters, that's obvious. And then those will be quick, and those are the ones that will matter, and that's it. No booth reviews, period. in basketball, that thing last night is freaking silly.
I mean, it is stupid. Again, I was like, I was disgusted by it because I'm with Murray. I thought that call at the end of that game took all the fun out of it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is what we're doing now. National championship game. A guy knocks the ball out of the other guy's hands. But on the way, it just grazed the guy's pinky on the outside of his hand, and so he's technically responsible. I mean, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Will in New Hampshire, your thoughts?
Yes, how you doing, guys?
Good.
First, real quick, as far as the Knicks go, if they get the first pick, I don't think they're...
Will, you got talking to your phone like a pizza, man.
There's too much money to be made there. Secondly, NFL replay. I agree with you. I think it's going to ruin the league. Why at the end of a half would a team ever take a knee now? You might as well air it out, throw a Hail Mary, throw the challenge flag, and take your chances.
I keep telling you,
of getting the call.
They don't even have to throw the challenge. Inside of 2 minutes, they're all booth reviews.
You know what? I like that idea. Get rid of the two-minute thing. If there's a bad call in the final 2 minutes, you have to challenge
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Get
no,
rid of it.
I'm talking about no booth reviews.
Yeah, get rid of it automatically. Get rid of it.
No crew chief challenges. No booth reviews in the inside of 2 minutes. None of this fracocta stuff in the NBA where they just go over there every time there's a close out of bounds play in the last 2 minutes. No. And this is Vinny Crouch at NBC Sports Boss, and he emailed us, and I think he's right. It's the number of times they go over there. If you feel you have to have replay, just make a coach's challenges and make it a finite amount.
Well, and that think of what that does. It eliminates, you know, challenging on a spot on a second down play in the second quarter. Like that's idiotic. And it also makes the coaches appreciate the big plays in the game because you can't focus on the minutia. You got to hold on to them for those 2 minute situations.
Again, if you go way back, there were a series of plays where you said if we had replay, we could easily correct this and we get the right result. And I agree. The obvious Don Dechinger play in the 85 World Series or the Houston Oilers here in Foxborough, if you remember way back in 79, 78, like all those series of plays. So yeah, use replay for that. Give the coach one or two chances. And that's it. And if he gets one right, maybe give him another one. Fine. You know, two, three at the max if you get two right. But that's it. And just do that if you feel you need to do it. Again, everything on the board here, Felger and Maz. Here's Steve in the car on the Kraft investigation. He joins us next on line two. Steve, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Just quickly, I noticed, been listening lately, you guys are like obsessed, absolutely obsessed with seeing this Robert Kraft video. From the massage parlor. I'm just curious, why are you so obsessed? It seems pretty perverted.
I'm a pervert.
77 years old. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, what else do you want to see? What do you like? What about R. Kelly? Would you want to see those tapes? I mean, where does it end for you?
Do you think I've been obsessed?
Why are you trying to drag him through the mud so hard?
I'm not obsessed with the video. I'm obsessed. I mean, if I'm obsessed about anything or put off by anything, it's how he's handled it since he got rung up.
Okay, well, you've been coming across lately like, you are absolutely obsessed. Like, you need to see this video to, like, survive. Like,
well, I'll tell you what, Steve.
Strange. Do
you no,
think
well,
that's normal?
Well, no, not at all. Yes, I do find it normal. It's just how I'm wired. When he comes out and calls cops liars and says that all these cops were liars and that they're lying and that the attacks, the cops down there, then
They did lie. They did lie to get the warrants to do the video.
Then I want to see the video because I think those guys are doing their job and I think their hearts are in the right place. And I don't think Kraft's heart is, or his attorneys are.
How does that help you with what your sort of judgment is?
It's just sort of a personal thing. I think when someone acts poorly or lies, which I think Kraft and his side is doing, then I want to see the other side win. It's just how I'm wired.
All right, what about? I mean, you don't think any of your friends or associates have done something like this?
I don't care about the rub and tug.
You want to see your friends or family members or maybe the people in the studio with you? You want to see those videos?
If they came out and then started attacking well-intentioned cops, yes, I'd say they get what they deserve, 100%.
I think Murray's probably been to one of these parlors.
No, but I can send him a dirty airdrop right now via my phone if he wants to look at any of the other videos I got on there.
Yeah, you come across as a guy who's probably been to a couple.
Hey, Steve, if one of these places is around the corner from your home, I don't know if you're married or if you have kids, how would you feel about it?
Maz, I wouldn't put it past you. I wouldn't put it past you to drop in and see what's going on.
I know. Well, you can put it, you can say whatever
Steve.
You want. You know.
What else you got, Steve?
Sugar.
What else
Sugar.
You got, dude?
Watch,
preschool.
Watch the video of... Would you want to see Maz on video?
Preschool's back in session soon. You got anything else? Go back and get your pacifier and go back to preschool, kid. Baby Patriots fan. I don't need to see the video. And I don't care about the massage. In fact, on day one, we more or less dropped the story. It was just a massage. But if you're going to lawyer up and attack the people down there who are just trying to do their jobs, then I got no use for you. Then let's see the video. That's where I stand. So, sorry. Sorry that your guy's being embarrassed, but that was his call to go to that massage parlor. Not mine, not Maz's, not Murray's, not yours. If you didn't want your guy to be embarrassed, you should tell him not to go to the massage parlor if you take it so personally. Here's Matt in Medford on the Bruins. Go ahead, Matt. Hello, Matt. He is not there. How about Dave in Dover on Instant Replay? Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's happening? Glad I get to follow that tool bag. Hey, the replay drives me nuts. And I can't tell you the number of times I've been with people in the last few days, last few games. Like, Felger, you nailed it on the head. You can't cheer. You're sitting with people having a beer. Love to celebrate a touchdown, but you can't. Or last night in the game, love to celebrate the fact that, hey, Texas Tech's going to get the ball back. But you can't. It's ruining watching the game. And not to, you know, the added in time on, I don't care. But it's watching the game. I can't even cheer with my son with the Patriots last year in the Super Bowl.
Well, Dave, I'll tell you this. In football, it's always been that way. You've always been, when you see a play in football, it's always like, is there a flag? So you've always had in the back of your mind that maybe this is coming back. So whether there's replay or not, I've always felt that way in football. You can never really breathe easy till you see there's no flags. There ain't no flags. You've got to, you know, anytime there's one of those plays, you're holding your breath. But in every other sport, baseball, a play happened, it happened. And you could breathe easy. Not anymore. Not anymore. And in basketball, forget about it. Any out-of-bounds play? Any out-of-bounds play, they're going to the monitor.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
All right, we're largely staying away from the Red Sox game until it's over. Not a pretty outing for Chris Sale. I think we can weigh in on that quickly because Sale's long since out of the game. What did you see from Sale today, Maz, before I go back to the phone?
I mean, in the bits that I looked up there, the velocity was a little better. He's at 92 instead of 88, 89, 91, 92. So it went up a few ticks. To me, that's where he should be if they are truly, quote unquote, building. But it still looked to me like he was kind of all over the place. And I just don't see guys respecting the velocity. So on a day like today, it's cold, it's lousy. You know what you do? You pound him with fastballs. Because nobody's going to hit the ball very far. Fenway's a brutal place to play in April. The pitcher should dominate the game. And he's just not throwing as hard. And the off-speed stuff's up still. And so he probably has no feel for it because it's hard to throw off speed when your fingers are numb. And so, you know, I look at that all and say, this is, you know, if this is ramping up, well, then you're not going to have the same sale in the month of April, right off the whole month.
Gave up a lot of singles. It just felt like looking up out of the corner of my eye and the control was not there. The key sequence is whatever inning it was where the Jays got to five runs. They had runner on second and third, I think, with one out. And Sale got the first guy on a strikeout, I think. I mean, they didn't score. And so now he's got what he wants, second and third, two outs, and get out of the inning. He throws a wild pitch to the guy to bring in the fourth run. And then they steal home on him on the fifth run. And maybe he sees him at the very last second because he then yanked it to the backstop as well. And that just, you know, no sort of command of the game or control of the game at that point.
So my guess is someone yelled, right? A lefty's an easy guy to steal home on. When, you know, again, people shoved it down my throat for 10 years when Jacoby Ellsbury did it. It was Andy Pettit on the mound. He turns his back to that side. So as soon as he starts, the guy takes off. It's smart base running. But I also think it tells you, like, you know, there's something about that play in general that's, like, disrespectful. Right? It's like, you suck so bad, we're going to steal home because you're not paying attention. And, you know, and we think we can do it. And so that's what irritates me about that play. And I guarantee you, Sale's pissed about it too. I mean, you just see what he says about it after the game.
Okay, your phone's on everything. We spent a lot of time on the replay thing from last night. Disgrace. Another example how replay does not work. Overtime. Minute to go in overtime of the national championship game. And you're screwing around with the with an atom on the outside of the guy's pinky. That's a big one. We did some Patriots and some Bruins earlier as well. More Cassidy commentary on his goaltending situation, which we can circle back to as well with you. But to your phones, as promised, here's Michael in Nashua on replay. Go ahead, Michael.
So listen, I'm worried about the NFL.
Okay, so that phone's not going to do it. He's worried about the NFL. That was Murray's big point. You saw last night, and you thought,
oh,
NFL.
This is the future. This is going to be the last 2 minutes of games. Someone chucking up a Hail Mary, or really any pass play. And, oh, nope, we got to take our time, look at it. And, oh, I saw a minuscule little bit of pass interference there. Out comes the flag. And it's just going to take forever, and it's going to slow everything down, and it's going to suck.
Microanalysis.
Oh.
I mean, really, that's what it's become now, micro-analysis. It's too much.
We're too far down the road with replay. It's not going to go away. That's a pipe dream. So I've accepted that. But there should be changes, and one of those changes should be they have to watch it in real time. You can't slow this thing down to the millisecond and say, ooh, now the ball did touch. Well, I don't know. What do you see? Oh, hold on. Let me look at it here. Let's slow it. Ah! I don't even like try to like play it out because it's awful.
I mean, to me, it's these games are about the spirit of the competition. Isn't that what you watch?
And they kill all of that.
Yes.
So now we got to go into microanalysis about whose knuckle hair the thing went off when it was going out of bounds?
Yes. Yep, that's it.
This thing last night, I didn't have a dog in the fight, but it was a very entertaining game after being told all day, it's going to suck, it's going to be low scoring, it's going to finish 49-48. Great game until that moment, and it all went to hell. It really did. I was like, this was awesome until this, and now it's garbage because it got ruined by replay.
We've got Jimmy in New Hampshire. Hi, Jimmy.
So true, guys. I'll tell you, it's official that the nerds have defeated the athletes. Like, because 1,000 out of 1,000 times, if you're playing pickup, that ball is out off of the defender.
That's right.
And the offense keeps the ball. And so, like, what are we doing? It's right to be angry. Like, as a sports fan, I'm furious at that. Like, don't tell me the nerd is coming in to tell the people playing that, no, you guys are wrong. We're going to give that ball to the defense. And real quick before I go on Kyrie, guys, why do we care if he leaves? We're not better with him. We don't want to pay him $30-plus million a year to stay.
Okay, well, that's a whole different conversation. You don't want him. You're better off with him. Better off without him. Some people feel that way. I don't know if you're right. But he mentioned something I don't know if enough people bring up. Are we sure that the Celtics are offering the full max, every last dime that Kyrie could be earning from the Celtics?
I mean, I believe they will.
Are we sure of that, Jimmy? Are they willing to offer every last dime they're able
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I believe they will.
So money's not an issue?
I don't think so.
Okay. I can't imagine how it could be. I mean, if you're not doing that, then you have no chance.
I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, is that a question? Is it a variable that we're not considering? Is one of the reasons Kyrie cooled to you because he understood that he's not getting all the money?
I don't think that's it.
No, I think he just has a bad attitude.
Okay, fair enough. Just asking the question, facilitating a conversation there.
He's a diva. He's a pain in the ass. Unfortunately, I still want him.
Yeah, Mike.
I'm a leader.
Phil and Malden on Kraft. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, thanks. I agree with you guys on that other caller. You know, if Kraft, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty, but, either, you know, face up to it. You know, you got caught with your pants down.
Literally.
If you want to say it. But
yep. Be a
at
man.
Least admit it, you know. You're an owner. You're making the franchise look like a, you know, a joke. And for that guy to tell you guys you don't know what you're talking about, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking
about.
No.
But then to go and, classic Patriot. Deny, accuse. Well, you guys probably go too, you know. Like, what? That's where I get off the boat. With Kraft or anyone like that. You start attacking other people when you're the one who walked in there? Own it like a man. Be a man.
I mean, that mentality, like, and I'm going back to the caller now, but effectively Kraft's doing the same thing. That mentality of you want to watch a video? That's what you want? No, I don't want to watch a video. But if the video being produced determines the outcome of the case, then I want the video out.
Well, I only want it spitefully if someone's going to handle themselves the way Kraft and his lawyers have. Honestly, that's what I say. It's like, all right, you want to go to trial? You're not going to take the deal? They're willing to seal the evidence. They're willing to suppress the video. You just have to say you would have lost in trial.
I mean, I don't make any moral judgment. And I've said this from the beginning.
You don't want to take that? I mean, you just don't want to admit it, take the loss? Well, then let's see the video. Like, that's my view of it. I don't know. I don't need to see the Patriot missile.
See, I wonder what that guy was hiding, now that I think of it. Because, like, I tell you what, you can put cameras on me 24/7. I mean, there might be a little stuff in there that, you know, you don't want to see.
Not me. And had I been to one of those places, I'd own it. Because, again, this is a crime of vice. I really don't give a rat's ass. What I find deplorable is that you're fighting it tooth and nail for two misdemeanors. Had he just said, yeah, it happened. I made a mistake. I was a lonely man. We're not even talking about it anymore.
Correct. What can I tell you? We've got Josiah in San Antonio on the Sox pitching, which, again, not the best day at Fenway today. Go ahead, Josiah.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to give Maz credit. He was working hard yesterday on your show and the baseball reporters and also on Talk of Baseball with Lou and Tomasi. But my question was, with Chris Sale, I hear this notion that basically they were stupid for signing him to that long-term contract and wait. My question is, why should you prolong the contract when you gave up the farm to get him and just lock him up and you keep talking about he's breaking down? I mean, knick-knack injuries here and there, but why not lock him up long-term? He's one of the best pitchers.
Okay, why not? Because he's throwing 88 in his first couple games of the year is why not. I mean, that's why you raised the question. I don't know if it's the right or wrong thing, but I don't know. Are you worried about the contract, Maz?
Yeah, sure. I told you, I'd have waited till the end of the year. That's all. That was my only point from the beginning. I wouldn't have done it. I wanted another year in the books before I made that decision. Because with the way last year went, he faded again. He broke down at midseason. He wasn't throwing hard. Now we're throwing a shoulder injury on top of it. And I know they said it was minor, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, he never had to go under the knife and all of that. But still.
But could we wait?
What's the harm? It costs you more money. You're the Red Sox. You can afford it.
So that's sort of where I come down on it. As you say, Chris, look, we want you here, but the shoulder thing is something we need to keep an eye on. We have every intention of keeping you here. We need to see how the year goes. And if that pisses him off, well, then he doesn't get it. Like, you know, and so, but I would also say, let's say he gets on the open market and it costs you, instead of 5 and 145, it costs you 6 and 180. So for $35 million, is that a gamble worth taking? I would. For $35 million another year? Yeah, I'll wait. I'll absolutely wait. Because I'm going to pay $145 now anyway, so I might as well wait.
We continue with your thoughts. We'll reset our Bruins items as well from earlier on in the show. Bruce Cassidy on this morning with Tutcher and Rich. Lending more insight to the Bruins goaltending situation. He's trying to tell you something if you're willing to listen. We'll get to that right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, I'd feel comfortable with either guy in nets. Like, if Tuukka was hurt and Halak had to start, I think our guys play equally well in front of both goaltenders. For us to use one or the other, I don't think it's a big deal in our locker room. I think that's what you got to be careful of. You pull your starter, throw a guy in there, the rest of the guys are looking at you like, what the hell are you doing, you know? But I think our guys realize that one with both, so it shouldn't be a big issue if we have to go down that road.
All right, you want to talk about a topic I'm obsessed by, legitimately obsessed by. Rask and the coverage thereof. It's really the coverage thereof. This protective crew that has enveloped Tuukka. It's really just the guys that cover the team for some reason. And I keep saying for some reason. I know the reason. It's hockey snobbery. They think you're stupid. They think the hockey fan is dumb. Because what dumb hockey fans do is their team loses a game and they just blame the goalie. And so the hockey writer is, I have a greater understanding of the game than you. So I don't just blame the goalie. I watched the entire game, which you don't, you Neanderthal moron. So that's what it's really born out of, a snobbery that they think you're stupid. And maybe something else, I don't know. But the protective net around Tuukka Rask fascinates me, that the only guys that just hyper-defend him are the guys that cover the team. And I read something from DuPont the other day in the Globe that sort of got me going, because DuPont's one of these guys. He's a Tuukka Rask defender. and they're doing the Globe's doing like these roundtables just in print where they ask three of their writers about things to do with the Bruins Leafs series. And one of the questions simply is, how will Tuukka Rask do? Is he on a short leash? DuPont's answer, Rask will be fine. Classic case of a fan base prone to scapegoating. He immediately engages the fan. He immediately calls the fans morons. Okay, is that the fan asking him the question? It's the Globe in this roundtable. How will Tuukka Rask do? Is he on a short leash? Instead of engaging the question or reporting on how Tuukka has played or how the coach feels about him, DuPont immediately says the fans are morons. In so many words. Because that's what he said. Classic case of a fan base prone to scapegoating.
I wonder if he's talking about us or you.
Well, he said fan base. I don't know if I'm included in that.
Yeah, but you're the voice of the fan.
He says, Rask will be fine. Very good. Just sense the defensiveness in the answer. Rask will be fine. Classic case of a fan base prone to scapegoating. He still takes the arrows for those two goals in a span of 17 seconds that wiped their chances of a cup in 2013. The Bruins had lots of problems in that series, and Rask was not one of them. Yet such is the goalie's life. So that's the thing that sort of bugs me, too. I don't blame Rask for losing that series, but he wasn't one of the list of problems. I think they lost. What was the overtime game here they lost in game four? Was it 6-5?
I think it was 6-5, yeah. Sounds right. It was a high-scoring game.
He gave up six. He gave up a sixth spot in one of the games. And then in the clincher, gave up two in the last 17 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not on the list? So that's just like, I mean, you're not even honestly assessing the situation. Of course he was on the list of problems. He didn't pull his end at the time. Now, he wasn't singularly to blame. No one was. The Blackhawks were better. That's how I look at that series. But to completely, like Rask was a zero sum in that. Why are you doing that? Like, why go to that extreme? And that's just silly. You know, I mean, you're just doing what the fans are doing, which is going to some silly extreme, neither of which are true. But either way, what frustrates me is that the Ty Andersons of the world, love you, Ty, and the DJ Beans of the world, don't love you, DJ, and the DuPonts of the world are like, Rask is fine, he's not the problem, you idiot. And they're not listening to the coach. They're not listening to the coach, who the coach pretty much all year, and certainly the closer we've gotten to the playoffs, has said over and over and talked about his goalie situation over and over and over again, as in a real tandem, as in the other guy has experience and playoff wins too, and we like him too, and we've been just as good in front of him as the other guy, and he has spoken as if the goalie position is, like I said earlier, their third line left wing.
He wants it out there.
Which is, we're going to go with the better guy, we trust both guys, we play who's better, and goalie is just like that position. He has a starter, but he's not treating it any different. And I don't think the writers are picking up on this because they're too busy defending Tuukka against you and, fine, me. And I'm not even bashing Rask. I'm just trying to get it through their skull that, listen to the coach, he's trying to tell you something. And there was more of it this morning on Toucher and Rich. More, you just heard that quote here. How about this one? Play the second one, Jimmy.
And it's a performance-driven industry in the playoffs. Everything's magnified. You're obviously on a much shorter time frame. You know, you lose, you're done. So, you have to make some of these judgments quickly. And hopefully the players realize that, you know, listen, we're going with the best guy that day. And then what we've done around here, I think, for, you know, the last 2-3 years is we're trying to put the best guys out there. And the next day is a new day. We move on to the next game. Guys get second and third chances to sort of go back in if they've proven they can handle that. And it would be no different in that position, that's for sure.
No different at that position. He's not saying what the writers are saying, which is ride or die with Tuukka. He's your number one. He's one of the best goalies in the league over the last 10 years. And if you don't think so, you're an idiot. Cassidy's not saying that. He's saying we got two guys that we like and the best guy plays. It's a performance-driven industry. Thank God Cassidy has that approach. Thank God. But he's been saying it over and over and over again in so many words.
So I wonder if they think he won't see it through, that it's a threat and he's just trying to motivate Tuukka. In which case I say, I don't care. He's saying it. Like, I honestly think that he would pull him if Tuukka plays poorly. I don't think it's a bluff. Cassidy doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's bluffed.
But these are all the same guys that told you the team would never be the same without Claude Julien, and you don't know what you're talking about if you want to fire the coach. Who are you going to hire? Who are you going to get to hire? Who are you going to get to replace him, Felger? You should come up with that. No, maybe they just needed to turn the page from Claude. But thank God Claude's not here. Because, again, the things Cassidy's saying, performance-driven industry, going with the best guy that day, best guy that gives us a chance to win. Next day's a new day. We'll give you a second or third chance, but we're going to go with the best. So that's how he handles his lineup. Another example, David Backus is out. David Backus is out. $6 million a year, trusted veteran. If David Backus played for Claude Julien, you think Claude would ever sit someone like David Backus?
I highly doubt it.
You know, that's his kind of guy. And Backus was Bruce's kind of guy. I mean, Backus sacrificed himself in the second half of the year, taking all those fights and playing the way that he played so he could stay in the lineup. I mean, Backus did everything that he could possibly do. But Cassidy looks at the Maple Leafs, says they are fast as hell, and I want that fourth line to be a checking line against one of the skilled lines in Toronto, and I'm going to throw David Backus out there against Mitch Marner? I can't do that. And so David Backus is going to sit. He plays the best guy that gives him a chance on that day.
And I'm sure that stings Backus a little bit, but he can't be surprised by it. Just the way he talked towards the end of the year, he knew what he had to do to try to hang on with this team. So
I'd be willing to bet Backus expected it.
Yeah.
Like, it feels to me like Cassidy doesn't know, you know, you don't hear a lot of griping over there because I think they're being told ahead of time. It feels that way anyway. No, he's pretty blunt.
Somehow he's got, you know, he's a pretty blunt guy. He calls you out when it's time to call you out. He'll sit the veterans, and you don't hear any chirping over there. So there's either something in the delivery or his approach or something.
He just keeps it real. Since he got the job.
He still holds the room. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it ain't going to last forever. It doesn't last forever for any coach. I mean, he's going to burn out eventually and burn that room out eventually. But in the two and a half years now, you know, I feel like he's got the finger on the pulse. And now he's doing it with the goalie. And it's about time. And he did it this year. And it's not going to end in the postseason. If Tuukka struggles, you're going to see the other guy. And there's a coach here who's willing to do it and not just go on reputation or contract or something like that. And it's refreshing. So there's your Bruins Minute. Back to you after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
First game, we're looking at probably dressing our fastest lineup. We've got a couple more days to decide and sort through it, but that's kind of the direction we're going. So that might keep Bax out of game one. But his role changed a little the second half of the year. He became a much more of a physical player, back to his roots, so to speak. He had had some injuries, and I think it took him a while to sort of grab onto that. He played very well for us.
It's Cassian Backus, who's probably going to take that seat, start the series on Thursday night. Interesting lineup move, but it makes total sense. Toronto's fast as hell. And that fourth line is going to be a checking line. You're going to get, you know, that. So Toronto goes, well, they have really three, four good lines. But those first two, you know, you're talking Matthews, the first center, Tavares, the second, or vice versa. Bergeron's going to square off against one of those. I think Cassie wants that fourth line to square off against the second. So you can't have Backus out there against one of those lines. You just can't. He can't keep up. He's not going to do it.
Too slow.
So, and that's makes perfect sense. Cassie had more on the speed about this series. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I do expect the first game to be the fastest game of the series. I think Toronto understands how they have to play to beat us, and I think we can certainly keep up the pace. I think we're a more physical team once it gets going. Last year, we kind of dragged them into that game. I think it worked in our favor. I don't know if they'll bite on that again this year.
Okay, so I don't remember that. The first couple of games were physical, and they sort of baited Toronto. I mean, I remember Kadri.
Yeah, right, he gets suspended.
Yeah, cheap shot. I can't remember on who. Marchand, maybe, but... And got suspended, so maybe that's what Cassidy's referring to. Bruins definitely more physical, more stout team. Toronto faster. So Cassidy's anticipating. Toronto's saying, we're not going to take the cheese. We're not going to, you know, we're just going to skate. We're going to outskate them. And so Cassidy's trying to match him. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely it does. Look, again, I felt this way, and it's not apples to apples, but I felt this way about Lucic at the end here. The game is the change of the game, the evolution of the game into a speed game. Lucic isn't fast enough to play it anymore. or I felt like at least what he showed here. You know, I haven't seen him since he left, really, not regularly. So Backes, to me, is sort of a similar thing now. I mean, but he can't play any pace. That's a problem. He can't keep up.
Okay, your call's on everything. Here's John in Providence on the Bees. What do you got?
Hello. I think that we're going to dominate them. And I kind of like the lineup. Our first and third lines are nasty.
Hey, John, are you eating?
Maybe I am, maybe I'm not.
What might you be eating?
Well, I know what I'm having. I'm having an everything bagel from Providence Bagel. You should come down and try it sometime.
Okay, maybe. Good. It sounds good. Sounds good in your mouth.
Yeah, I...
It definitely sounded like a big, heavy starch was going on there.
I was hoping that on D...
I don't even remember what he said. What was his question?
Something about the third pairing. What do you think?
We've also done a fair amount of the Kraft investigation and Celtics. We'll get to both those items here. Michael and Bill Ricca on Kraft. What do you got, Mike?
Oh, hey, guys. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to touch on Kraft and the hypocrisy of him fighting this case. You know, does anybody remember during Deflategate when he said that for the betterment of the league, he was going to take the penalty, essentially for the betterment of the Patriots, you could say, too? Taking the penalty now on Brady. Now when it's his turn, he's in trouble, he's fighting it.
Huh.
Does anybody see that or touch on that? Because I was just curious, because it's dawned on me, it's bothered me, because now his feet are in the fire, his butt is in the griddle, and now he's the one that's fighting it.
It's kind of a nice little point. That'd be better for everyone, his team, his family, the whole thing. It goes away if he just accepts the plea. It goes away. Goes away. They seal the evidence. According to TJ Quinn, again, or that was the deal on the table. I don't know if it still applies. So maybe that horse has left the barn. But up until last Friday, if he had taken the plea, the video goes away forever. And then it just goes away. But then he'd have to admit he would have lost in court. So is he not willing to take the same bullet Brady took?
Oh, I think that's exactly it.
And, you know, it was easy for Kraft to do because that wasn't him taking the bullet. That was Brady. That was Brady on the hook. So I don't know. It's a fair point by the caller. Tyler in Nashua, New Hampshire on the Celts. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, love the show, guys. I was just calling to see your opinion on what you guys would do in Brad Stevens' position. If you were the coach, what is your starting five going into the Pacers, and who do you think the biggest X factor is? And then following that, in a big if they make it to the the Bucks, what is your starting five there?
Okay, so screw the Pacers. It doesn't matter who they play. They're going to beat the Pacers. What's their best starting five? What lineup tweaks should they be making?
So I like the five at the end of the game that they play. They feel like, to me, they're leaning toward recently, which is Irving, Horford, Tatum, Hayward, Smart. I like those guys on the floor at the end of the game. And now, you want to tell me you're going against a team that has a big guy and you want Baines in there at the end of the game for defense? Fine, you take, you know, take one of those guys out, put Baines in, and maybe you take Smart out, whatever. We'll figure it out from there. But to me, those are the guys. Smart should be on the floor at the end of these games. He's got a knack for sticking his nose in there and making a play.
They've been starting Horford Baines.
Yes.
Do you care? It's helped them.
No, they've done pretty well with that.
Yeah, and again, but I think it also
is the closing five more important than the starting five?
Yes, absolutely. I also think it's matchup dependent. Indiana's got a big guy, right? Miles Turner. In fact, they got a couple of big guys. So to me, maybe you want Baines on the floor a little bit more in that series. But the ones that are non-negotiable to me really are Hayward, Irving, Horford. Those guys have to be out there.
Chris in the car, what do you got on Rask?
Hey, guys, how you doing? I just, quick point on Rask, and I just want to see collectively what you guys feel about what you think his worst attribute is, because personally I feel like it's his soft goal ratio. And is there has there ever been a topic or a statistic between top-tier goalies on when there's two or less either defenseman in front of him, or you know, just when he lets up something from the blue line, or
so there's the best they have is these high danger save percentages or above average save percentage, like high difficulty save percentages. I read something the other day. I thought I mentioned something the other day where there was some stats on it. That's all I've heard. Like, how does he do on 2-on-1s? How does he do on odd man rushes? I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't feel his biggest problem is the soft goal. I mean, he lets him up, but all goalies do. I think his angles get wonky. I think when, you know, because he's not acrobatic and because he's not super athletic, you know, he plays a very conventional style. When he's off his angle, he's porked. It's not like he can be off his angle and account for it with, you know, some acrobatic save like Tim Thomas or, you know, some of these other guys. If he's off his angle, it's over. And so I think when he loses that, And I think sometimes it gets really goofy where he'll slide or sometimes out of the net. Look at the game-winning goal he gave up in Game 6 against Ottawa in the playoffs 2 years ago. We run the still image all the time. He slid all the way outside the post. Slid all the way outside the post, which is an extreme example. But I think, especially on the rush, I feel like he sometimes loses his angle. When he loses an angle, he's porked. Because he doesn't have that acrobatic style to make up for it.
I mean, I think he nailed it. I think he's such a tactical goalie that if he's a little off, all of a sudden the net gets a lot bigger.
It's exactly right. Chuck in Boston. Go ahead, Chuck.
What do you guys think of Coyle? I think he plays a good speed game. If he can start burying the puck, I think he could be an X factor in this series. What do you guys think?
No question. The whole run, how far they go? Coyle, Johansson, Heinen, that's that third line.
That's a big one in this series, too.
They could do something.
It's a big one because Toronto's got three centers.
Johansson, I'm looking forward to. Johansson, I don't know. You want a Felger X-Factor guy? Watch, he'll get hurt in the first game or go zeros across the board. But Johansson's just someone, I don't know. I have a little bit of faith that he's going to do something. Coyle?
I have no faith in Coyle.
Coyle, something doesn't add up. Something doesn't add up with that guy.
Yeah, Rick Nash light. That's what he is.
Big, skates well, possesses the puck. Every once in a while, you see him do something with his hands. It's like, that's elite sort of move right there with the puck. He's decent on the draws. He's decent in his own end. It's like, there's so many good things I can say about him. The puck never goes in the net.
Knock off Nash. I'm telling you, that's what he is. Knock off Nash. You look at it and you go, wow, there's size. Wow, there's speed. Boy, can keep guys away from the puck and hold on to it forever. And nothing ever happens.
There's no production. So I don't know. I don't get it.
He's docile. He must be docile. He must be a pacifist.
I don't feel like he's play soft. I just feel like the puck doesn't go in the net with him. But there's a chance there. They're going to need that line. They're going to need you need depth, which what they did not have last year. When that first line dried up, they were porked.
Could be a big line in this series. Again, Toronto's throwing waves at you. That could be a big line.
Okay, we've got Red Sox, if you want to circle back to it. We've left it mostly to the side here during the game, but it's coming to the end, so if you want to weigh in on the game, you can. We've had some Celtics stuff. Kyrie Irving says he'll take a meeting with the Lakers, or sources say to Stephen A. Smith, Kyrie Irving, as a free agent, going to take a meeting with the Lakers. How does that taste? How's that taste, Green Teamers?
Sour.
How does that purple and yellow tush taste? Right? How does Magic's ass taste? Right in your face. Okay, so how's that feel? And, oh, by the way, just get ready for that the whole playoffs. Get ready for that the whole playoffs. Because the free agent thing ain't going away once you get to the postseason. I think it's going to ramp up. So that's on the board. Bruins stuff here with the Cast interview this morning on Toucher and Rich. Some craft stuff, whatever you want. I promise, right to your phones after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.